Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barton, Washington. Today is Thursday, August 24th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Authorities in Zimbabwe extend voting by a day until today, Thursday.
Zimbabwe Electoral Commission Chief Executive Officer Utoile Sligwana says voting in these places was affected by ballot delays on Wednesday.
We'll have analysis of all the election day developments. The armies of the DRC and Uganda released rebel hostages. The Ugandan opposition leader embarks on a nationwide mobilization. Putin and Xi slammed the West at the BRICS summit in South Africa. Several U.S. news organizations report that Wagner leader Prigozhin may have been killed in a plane crash outside Moscow.
My sense is that Russia will continue this activity through a PMC, whether it's Wagner or somebody else. They could either put the Wagner people under a different oligarch, or they could put a different company in place.
And Liberia's education minister credits the Weah administration for the successful passing rate of students taking this year's West African Senior School Certification Examination. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Authorities in Zimbabwe have extended voting by a day until today, Thursday. This after voters in some districts waited for hours to cast their ballots due to a delay in the distribution of ballot papers. The main opposition Citizens Coalition for Change alleges that the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission targeted opposition strongholds such as Bulawayo and Harare to suppress votes. Reporter Rutendo Manwere reports from Harare.
Zimbabwe has extended voting to Thursday, 24 August. The Zimbabwe Electoral Commission Chief Executive Officer Utoile Sligwana says voting in these places was affected by ballot delays on Wednesday. Polling was supposed to start from Wednesday, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. for a continuous period of 12 hours, but delays in the delivery of some polling materials caused some polling stations to open as late as 4 p.m. The opposition Citizens Coalition for Change president, Nelson Chamisa, alleges ZEC targeted Harare and Bulawayo, the opposition's strongholds, to frustrate voters. For VOA Africa, this is Rutendo Mawere in Harare.
Zimbabweans were still voting late into the night on Wednesday after elections got off on the wrong foot in most urban areas, with Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, known as ZEC, failing to deliver voting materials on time. Leopold Muhende is the chief correspondent for NewZimbabwe.com. He tells viewers Douglas Umpoga that in most places, voting materials arrive very late.
Up to now, people are still voting. The voting was supposed to start at 7 a.m. and at 7 p.m. People are still voting. In some areas, the ballot papers are yet to be delivered. It's quite bad.
How would you compare it to the previous election? Voting.
Probably the previous election was 100 times better because people voted. The complaints were technical in terms of whether or not there were agents. But now, without the voting material itself, then there's no election.
What was the major problem? Was it about voting materials arriving late?
According to sources and ZEC itself, ZEC confirmed that it delayed the printing of the council ballot paper or ballot material because of court cases. But now the question is, there were no court cases involving council candidates. So various stations across the capital, especially in Bulawayo, the second largest city, did not have those council ballot papers, leading to a delay, that was one, or a total stop to the process across those two cities.
Is this the incompetence of those who organized the election, or was it something unforeseen?
I don't think anyone foresaw this. We all thought this was going to fail smoothly. The ZEC chairperson, Priscilla Chigumba, had promised that all was on course. She actually thanked the police commissioner general, Matanga, Gordon Matanga, for assisting them in transporting ballot voting material. So everyone thought voting material was at the polling station. So this actually came as a surprise. I had expected to have voted by 7:30 and then continue with my work. But unfortunately, I had to start with the work and vote at 8 p.m.
How would you describe the people's interest in voting? How was the turnout like?
The turnout was huge, especially in the morning. The youth where they, especially in Dzivarasekwa, Chaser, the Dzivarasekwa extension as Kembo and other areas, they were saying that they will not leave the polling stations up until they had voted. But I talked to them in the morning, and I do not know if they managed to remain at the polling stations up until this late. But the turnout was huge. I wouldn't know in other areas how it panned out as a result of the delays. Probably some just gave up, some went home and didn't come back. I wouldn't know.
Will everybody have to vote while they close their voting?
The law dictates that they can only close its stations once there are no longer any registered voters who want to vote.
That was Leopold Muhende, the chief correspondent for NewsZimbabwe.com. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Umpuga from Harare. Ugandan opposition leader Robert Chakulai, commonly known as Bobi Wine, says his party is embarking on a nationwide mobilization ahead of national elections in the next 2 years. Wine, who is also the president of the opposition National Unity Platform, says the party expects no problem with the police this time around. Reporter Mugumi Davis Rakarigi has more from Kampala.
Uganda opposition leader Robert Chagurani, commonly known by his stage name Bobi Wine, says his party has notified the police of its programs that will traverse the country. Bobi Wine and other members of the opposition have faced resistance from the police while on a campaign trail or whenever they try to address rallies. Bobi Wine is calling on the police to respect national laws and allow him and his team to freely interact with supporters.
We're going to carry out a nationwide tour where we'll be meeting our leaders, we'll be opening offices across the country, and we'll be addressing the people of Uganda because it is within the law.
Fred Enanga, Uganda police spokesman, told local media that the police will respond to Bobi Wine's letter. Bobi Wine also says he is deeply concerned with the recent political rivalries within another opposition party, the Forum for Democratic Change, or FDC. He calls it unfortunate that the ruling party, the National Resistance Movement, is trying to infiltrate and weaken the opposition. Some FDC leaders have accused a section of their colleagues of having received what they call blood money from President Museveni.
Museveni can buy out compromised leaders or tear apart opposition political parties, but he can never compromise the desire for change in the hearts of the people of Uganda.
The Secretary General of the ruling NRM party, Richard Tadrong, vehemently denies his party is involved in the current fracas within the opposition.
That is not true. We don't do that. There is no need for us to cause any chaos or confusion in any political party. They have their own internal weaknesses that they should address.
Sarah Birete is a political analyst in Uganda. She says she's not surprised with the wars in the opposition, including within the Democratic Party, ODP, and the Uganda People's Congress, or UPC. Both are Uganda's oldest parties and were instrumental in bringing independence to Uganda. She says she worries Uganda is slowly turning into a one-party state.
Like DP, for the last 1 year they've been fighting to get rid of Mao. But Mao has the protection of the state and support of the state. UPC has been fighting for 10 years to get rid of Akena. Akena has police deployed all over police headquarters. The same will apply to FDC. They are caught in a battle since 2021 elections. The battle has now gone public.
Norbert Mao, the president of DP, and Jimmy Akena, the president of UPC, recently signed agreements to work with the ruling party, the dismay of some of their supporters. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakrinji in Kampala, Uganda.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton, Washington. Today is Thursday, August 24th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Several U.S. news organizations were reporting on Wednesday that Yevgeny Prigozhin, the leader of the Russian mercenary group Wagner, was killed in a plane crash outside Moscow on Wednesday. 10 people were killed in the crash, many Glantz is a senior advisor for the Center for Russia and Europe at the United States Institute of Peace. She tells me that she believes Russia will continue its activities in Africa with or without Prigozhin. She also says Moscow's use of the group like the Wagner to destabilize the democracies in Africa is troubling to the United States.
So all we know so far is that a plane that has listed Prigozhin on the passenger manifest has crashed, and that they've recovered seven or eight bodies from the plane. It supposedly had 10 people on the plane, 3 people, 7 passengers, one of whom was supposed to be Prigozhin. So that's all we know now.
Do we know the origin of the plane and the destination?
I believe it was flying from Moscow to St. Petersburg, and it crashed in Tver, which is north of Moscow.
Of course, Mary, we know very little about whether Prigozhin was on the plane in actuality, but let's look at it in a broader sense. The mm-hmm. Wagner group has been making inroads in Africa. What would this mean?
So Prigozhin and I saw the video recently that Prigozhin put out that he's back in Africa. My sense is there are a number of private military companies and private security companies that operate in Russia under different leaders. My sense is that Russia will continue this activity through a PMC, whether it's Wagner or somebody else. They could either put the Wagner people under a different oligarch, or they could put a different company in place. But my sense is it will actually continue, that it's not going to have a significant impact on the long-term game of Russia in Africa as well.
The involvement of the Wagner group in Africa, how is the United States looking at this?
So I think for the United States, it's troubling because where Wagner goes, you tend to have chaos and human rights violations and anti-democratic activities. And obviously, the U.S. goal is that more countries in the world become democratic. The human rights that are signed up for in the United Nations are respected. So obviously, it's troubling when Russia sends these mercenaries in to help dictators and others limit the rights and the freedoms of their people. And so the fact that Russia's continuing to do this is troubling, and the fact that they keep using PMCs to do this is also troubling to the United States.
I'm reading a story, I think from ABC News, Wagner group leader Prigozhin dies in plane crash in Russia, but this is not confirmed. We don't know yet what happened.
Yeah, I don't think it's confirmed yet. I've been watching the Russian press. I've seen different statements. In fact, I saw one from a Wagner member or somebody who supports Prigozhin on the Telegram social media channel who alleged that the plane was shot down and said that if it was shown that Prigozhin was killed, they would be very angry and they might take steps again. But so far, I haven't seen a confirmation in the Russian press that he was actually killed yet, just that he was on the list of passengers on the plane.
Mary Glantz is the senior advisor for the Center for Russia and Europe at the United States Institute of Peace. She was speaking with us from Washington, D.C. China and Russia used the second day of the BRICS summit of emerging economies to criticize the West while also throwing their support behind the proposed expansion of what's seen by some as an alternative power bloc. Kate Butler has more from Johannesburg.
Fighter jets flew over Sandton, Johannesburg, sometimes known as Africa's richest square mile, on Wednesday, a sign that some very important people were gathered in the convention center below for the sunny second day of the BRICS summit. The leaders of Brazil, India, and China are all in South Africa, which is hosting the event, while Russian President Vladimir Putin is participating virtually to avoid arrest under an international criminal court warrant over war crimes in Ukraine. Via video link, Putin, who ordered Russia's invasion of Ukraine last year, said the West's actions had led to that conflict by trying to promote their hegemony, exceptionalism, and policies of neocolonialism. Putin spoke through a translator.
Our actions in Ukraine are guided by only one thing, to put an end to the war that was unleashed by the West.
Meanwhile, the leaders of Brazil and South Africa stressed the need for a peaceful solution to the Ukraine war, though there were no words of criticism for Moscow. For his part, Chinese leader Xi Jinping noted the world was undergoing major shifts and had entered a new period of turbulence and transformation. He blamed countries that form exclusive blocs for the problems. Xi spoke through a translator.
The Cold War mentality is still haunting our world, and the geopolitical situation is getting tense.
Xi had baffled China watchers the day before by failing to turn up when leaders each made a first-day address, instead sending his commerce minister to fill in for him. Paul Nanchula, a researcher at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies, said one could only speculate.
What I think is happening is there are some headwinds in back home in China, which are kind of upsetting the domestic dynamic. And I think something must have erupted that required the president's attention.
In other developments, Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi threw his support behind the group expanding after reports India was only lukewarm about the idea. High on the agenda of this summit is possible expansion of the BRICS group, with Argentina, Egypt, Iran, and Saudi Arabia among the countries that have applied to join. Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva also expressed support for expansion. However, he said BRICS must not aim to rival the US, and South African President Cyril Ramaphosa also stressed BRICS was not in opposition to anyone.
As we advance them, the interests of the global South that we as BRICS want to be ready to advance are essential, and in this regard, we want to cooperate more with all countries that aspire to create a more inclusive international order.
Another theme of the summit is de-dollarization and a move towards greater use of the BRICS currencies. Xi said he would like to see reform of the international financial system. The summit concludes on Thursday with a final statement from the group expected. Kate Bartlett for VOA News, Johannesburg.
On Wednesday, the Armed Forces of the Democratic Republic of Congo, also known as FARDC, handed over 24 hostages held by the Islamic rebel group, the Allied Democratic Forces, to the head of civil society in Beni in North Kivu province. A spokesperson for the Congolese military says the 23 hostages were freed during various military operations carried out in the region by the Congolese and Ugandan armies. Reporter Zanep Neti Zaide has more from Goma.
Most of the hostages say they had been abducted by ADF rebels in their respective localities. They say that in the bush they were used to transport stolen goods and were trained to handle weapons in order to join the rebel movement. Former hostage Masika Safari says she was kidnapped from a field in the village of Bashu in 2020. There in the bush, she had children with the ADF. She says it was on a day when there was a skirmish between them and the Congolese and Ugandan soldiers that she found the opportunity to flee with her family. Captain Anthony Mwalushai is a spokesman of the Congolese army in the Beni region. He says the girls held by the ADF were sexually exploited and some became pregnant. He understood that they did not want to become rebels. They are really victims. He says the army has no choice but to hand over to the civil society the hostages who have been released. The head of civil society in Beni, Pepin Kavota, welcomed the now ex-hostages. He says civil society groups welcome the work of the FARDC, UPDF coalition. It is true that many of their compatriots are violated by the rebels, including rape and forced labor. But thanks to the professionalism of the armed forces, some of them are being freed. The joint operations by the armies of the DRC and Uganda have helped to stabilize the Beni region, which had been prey to ADF rebels. Hundreds of civilians who were in the hands of the rebels have already been freed thanks to their operations. For VOA Africa, I'm Zanem Nechizaidi in Goma.
Liberia's Minister of Education says students' successful passing rates for last year's West African Senior School Certification Examination, also known as WASSCE, are a result of several interventions by President George Weah's government. The rate has varied in recent years from 71% in 2019, the first year of the Weah administration, to 81% in 2020, and now 94% in 2022. However, a closer look at some of the results shows that some students did not pass key subjects or their results were withheld, yet they passed anyway. Minister of Education Ansu Soni says the Weah administration waived exam fees and introduced a WASSCE tutorial program.
First of all, I need to always commend the president, and not just for commendation's sake. There is an aspect of education that is burdensome, which has to do with financial burden, and that is relief. So the students' concentration has now been on studying and preparing for the exams. Number two, in addition to the relief financially, we've also run special prep programs. And number three, we developed a digital platform where students can go on that portal and just practice questions. So the students that are very committed, they have worked together hard, and that's why we're getting the results that we are seeing. It suggests in here that of the 49,000 students, about 46,500 of them passed at least one subject. We're not saying they passed 100%. We passed said they passed at least one subject.
Minister, let me ask you, you mentioned that the students don't have to pass all the subjects. Is that correct?
No student passed all subjects.
I have seen one or two of the Wyatt certificates or transcripts. In one of them, there's an indication, I think it says withheld, all the subjects withheld, but yet that person has passed. In another, the indication is that four key subjects are withheld, but that individual also is declared passed. What does that mean if it says withheld?
Withheld means that from WIAC perspective, that those results are subject to some reviews that they intend to do, because basically these papers are marked, and when they are marked, you have both the electronic mark and you have a script writer's mark where teachers actually sit and mark the papers. So when the results are compiled and presented, the first presentation, this is why I call it provisional results. But the provisional results, like every other year, this is very, 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 very good. So we are now waiting to see later on, whatever other observation that WIAC may have, those other questions, maybe WIAC boss could give you further explanation. But so far, that is where I know has happened so far.
So talking about investment in education, what are the plans for the next year?
This year is the election year. So next year, I'm looking forward to enhancing investment in education. Because you see, we completed a new sector plan. That new sector plan is costed at about $0.96 billion. That's about $926 million. But that's for 5 years. So over those 5 years, the government and all of their respective partners who support this country's education system, their combined contributions and investment in education, including what students will be investing, is about that $1 billion.
Ansu Soni is Liberia's education minister. He was speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. And that's it for this Thursday, August 24th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for being our guest this morning. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Botting, Washington, saying, have a great day, and please be safe, whatever you do.